Welcome to the AI and Faith podcast. We are a community of expert technologists, professionals, and faith leaders bringing the ancient wisdom of the world's major religions to the ethics of artificial intelligence. Join us on this new journey and welcome to the conversation.
If you're having a baptism in your community, it's not just about like what a baptism represents theologically. Of course it is, but that's also just a time for people in the community to come together. But if that's happening online, or if you're asking ChatGPT to baptize someone, you're missing that component of it. And I think everyone, of course, went online during COVID, and a lot of religions are very grateful for how they were able to adapt and still bring in members who can't attend in person for whatever reason. But there is that notion of embodiedness and community that's hard to get in technology.
Hello, my name is David Brenner. I'm the chair of AI and Faith, and I will be your podcast host. Today's episode is a conversation with University of Washington PhD candidate Nina Lutz, recorded on September 16, 2025. In this episode, Nina discusses her work as a research intern at Microsoft Research this past summer, working on Microsoft's new initiative with faith leaders called Technology for Religious Empowerment, or T4RE. This initiative grew out of Microsoft's interest in understanding religion as a facet of human life that shapes how people interact and experience technology. As part of her research, Nina interviewed 48 faith leaders from 11 different faith traditions, in interviews lasting on average almost 2 hours. She presented her results on September 4 to a new network of organizations dedicated to fostering safe engagement by families and children with technology called the Faith, Family, and Technology Network, which itself is an outgrowth of the T4RE initiative. I was pleased to have the chance to interview Nina as she wraps up her work with T4RE and returns to her studies and research at the University of Washington in human-computer interaction. So listen now to our conversation. Nina, it's a delight to be with you on this Zoom call. I was really interested in the presentation you gave recently, following up on your research at Microsoft Research this summer, and I thought it would be wonderful to learn more directly from you about the experience, your key takeaways, and how you see this fitting into your own work going forward.
Yeah, very excited to be here.
Would you share how it was that you came to be at Microsoft this summer working on this interesting project around faith leaders and Microsoft in a conversation about the types of products that Microsoft makes and to mutual advantage?
Yeah, so I interned this summer at Microsoft Research. So Microsoft Research is kind of a satellite body of Microsoft that does research. They hire PhD students like myself every year to enact kind of exploratory work or work that's continuing the research portfolio or pushing it in new and exciting ways. I applied for this position that was focused on basically technology at the intersection of religion and doing foundational research. So empirical work, talking to people, just to understand this intersection more broadly. So I do want to be clear, like this is not a product organization. This is part of Microsoft Research doing what we would call foundational research. And foundational research is really exciting because it's kind of like green grass, blue skies. You really get to ask very open questions. And that was really exciting. And I think, at Microsoft Research and also at Microsoft broadly, you're looking at contending with technologies that are for the whole person. And most of the world is religious. So it's really valuable to do research in different sociocultural contexts, and religion is one of them. So I think I was really excited to see Microsoft Research think about it. And I was really excited to be the person that got to do some of this foundational research this summer as my internship.
What's your field of study and what did you bring to the project?
So I am a third year PhD student at the University of Washington. I'm in a department called Human-Centered Design and Engineering, but broadly my field of work is called Human-Computer Interaction. We really just think about the social and the technical, or as researchers say, socio-technical aspects of how technology kind of enters the world, interacts with all of us across all scales of our life. But basically my role this summer was to really outline foundational research. So I was doing a landscape study. A landscape study can be done in lots of ways, but I chose to do it via interviews. So I got to talk with 48 folks who were different types of religious stakeholders, from faith leaders to religious scholars, to people working at the intersection of technology and faith in policy or in think tank tech innovation spaces. So it was really fun. That's mostly what I was doing. And then I did a second body of empirical work, which was a red teaming, which is a security exercise that you do as part of AI safety and AI research with local Seattle area faith leaders at Microsoft Research. Those were the two studies I did. They were both human subjects qualitative studies. So there are always like some really exciting things we can learn, but I would say like a lot of stuff you might want to go test in other methods. But foundational research is meant to be generative towards what else do we want to test for? How do you want to experiment with this next?
What surprised you the most about the outcomes of your two projects?
That's a good question. So I think for the landscape interview study, I was really most surprised by this kind of tension between how some faiths are much more open to technological experimentation versus other faiths are a little bit more hesitant and they have stronger boundaries of technology. And it was kind of surprising to me to see how across all faiths, even the ones that were more open to experimentation, there was this pinpoint in time where the internet stopped kind of being the IRL online, but started being a little bit more algorithmically top-down curated. And that's when stakeholders felt that religion was suddenly having to act really fast and maybe felt like they were a little bit behind the cutting edge of technology. And it's where they started seeing harms that occurred in their communities, not just theirs, but others, but occurred in religious spaces in unique ways. And that's where we see stakeholders kind of take a pause and be like, oh, there's some things here that need to be handled from a digital safety angle, but also from an angle of how do we negotiate boundaries with technology? And that was really surprising just to see that even though you had stakeholders on different levels of openness with tech at large, they all kind of pinpointed that same moment when the internet really went algorithmic as a time of like, oh, the relationship really changed.
That's really interesting because it's more of a algorithmically mediated space at that point. Did you hear why that was a point of concern?
I think for a lot of people, if we think back, I'm going to date myself as a millennial, but if we think back from like when Facebook went from just being your friends and what they were posting and poking your friends on the wall to a recommendation feed, things felt a little weird, right? Like you went from this very chronological, very curated thing to suddenly being exposed to new ideas and people, which can be exciting. But in some communities, we saw that that could go very badly. Of course, at the most extreme end, we see the horrific genocide that occurred in Myanmar and how Facebook interfaced with that and algorithmically recommended media sort of started a very real and exacerbated a very real religious persecution. But then on the more interpersonal lens, I constantly talk with faith leaders who are seeing radicalization and polarization in their communities, and they don't quite know how to contend with it because they're usually one person in a 50-person space, but they're kind of screaming into an algorithmic void. And I think when we stopped having that curational control, there's some benefits. You get to discover new things and you get to kind of expand your horizons, which can be great. But there's also some cons because sometimes these algorithms, they reward behaviors that can be easily performed by malicious actors at the most extreme, or they might send people down rabbit holes that might not be great for their well-being. And while religion is a very old, very huge topic online, so you can go lots of different directions. And unfortunately, some of those directions lead people to places that are hard to contend with, and faith leaders and real religious communities feel like, oh no, suddenly like everything that's representing my religion is the more like fundamentalist or a little bit more like radicalizing point of view instead of the lived experience of religion in context of everything else.
So it's partly a loss of control, the curation part, and also a sort of move to the edges from what might be viewed as more orthodox views from faith leaders. Are those elements you heard?
Yeah, a little bit. I would say actually the bigger element too is about isolation versus community. Regardless of what a religious denomination believes, community is central in almost all human religion. And I think what a lot of folks see is that in today's world, especially as we go from like hyper-individualized feeds to now hyper-individualized AI agents, they're supposed to be our friends and companions and assistants, you're starting to see that where does community fit in there? How do we make sure that technology doesn't take away from time with community? And I think for religious communities, they often see themselves as communities that have lasted the test of time, which is very true in a lot of ways, but they also have to contend with this new environment. So I think that's even a bigger aspect of like the radicalization is there, the polarization is there, but the bigger thing to take away is that what does it mean to move from community curated spaces, spaces that value community, to things that are a little bit more individualistic and could pull people away from community. For example, if you're having a baptism in your community, it's not just about like what a baptism represents theologically. Of course it is, but that's also just a time for people in the community to come together. But if that's happening online, or if you're asking ChatGPT to baptize someone, you're missing that component a bit. And I think everyone, of course, went online during COVID, and a lot of religions are very grateful for how they were able to adapt and still bring in members who can't attend in person for whatever reason. But there is that notion of embodiedness and community that's hard to get in technology.
I'm married to a Presbyterian minister, and she just preached a sermon on Sunday on that very topic, importance of embodiment, and how do we live in a digital age while hanging on to our face-to-face embodied personhood?
That was something that came up again and again over so many different faiths. And I think it's, you know, it's something where a lot of folks talk about how technology can extend religion. So a lot of folks I talked to, for example, in the Hindu space, spoke to being in a really large diasporic religion, but you can experience temples in VR, and how that allows a closeness that you can't get easily, especially if you're living abroad. But this notion of bounding it to extending and not fully replacing was really important, I think, for a lot of stakeholders.
You know, I was in your presentation that I was able to see referred to religion as a resource for technologists. And that was an intriguing idea to me, because, you know, religion seems more like something people do or believe in than a particular resource. So could you explain a little more about that idea in your work and its meaning and importance?
Basically, you are right. Religion is definitely something that people believe and think and do. But scientifically, we can also look at it as a sociocultural resource, which is a fancy way of saying, here is something that is a formalized human phenomena that has been happening for millennia, religion in this case. You could also do the same thing with things like education or different identity axes, but you can look at it as something that you can draw from an additive lens. So for example, if you're an engineer and you are testing a new AI image model, it could be really important to look at religion as an additional case study and look into religious examples of imagery. So for example, of course, testing to make sure that an AI model can't take off someone's hijab, but also thinking about other religious garments. I think the hijab is a very common one that a lot of people are aware of, but there are other very important modesty garments, and also the notion of what else is important to make sure people are not doing in their faith. So many priests, rabbis, imams, other faith leaders, they have videos of their sermons online. We really want to make sure that these sermons aren't taken by a model and edited into something that they wouldn't want. So putting in those safeguards and thinking through that is just one example of how you could use religion as a resource. You could also maybe consider things like user testing. If you're designing an educational technology, that's awesome. We love education. You might want to test it with lots of different students. Religion is one type of education. So people go to Bible study, they go to Torah studies, they meet with faith leaders in very like formalized ways that we've been doing for centuries. And it could be a really interesting case study for your new educational technology. What might you find out from working with someone in some type of user test of someone converting to Judaism? That's a really unique type of education. It's an ongoing type of education for adults most often. And, you know, it's something that might not always be tested for. And in testing for it, you could find out things that could benefit all users, even outside of religious context. So that's what I mean by that. And I would say, like, you know, I didn't come up with that. Socio-technical or sociocultural resources, that's language that a lot of academics use. And I think it's really important to think about the fact that research, especially when you do work that isn't necessarily statistically representative, is about putting things into meaningful containers for people to actually take action on. So things like metaphors, things like best practices, a lot of those are not necessarily supposed to be representative or the end all be all, but they're supposed to be actionable.
Interesting. So what were some of your key takeaways from your research?
First things first, I think there's this notion from stakeholders that big tech, which is a very huge space that's constantly changing, is thought of as secular. But they see secular not necessarily in the way the dictionary defines it, which is going away from making sure that things are governed by religion, but having that separation of church and state, for example. They see secular as a way for technology companies to distance themselves from commitments they might have. So it's not necessarily that technology companies are a religion, although some people would argue that big tech is starting to remind them of religious institutions. But they do argue that technology companies have commitments and that they are non-neutral. And stakeholders basically feel that religious institutions give an example of organized institutions that interact with lots of stakeholders that are not claiming to be neutral and are being transparent about their commitments. And then through these secular embeddings, stakeholders felt that there were some unintended harms that happened from technology not considering religion. When you don't test for something, sometimes things can go wrong and people can get hurt. And that is something that came up. Thirdly, I would say that a lot of faiths and individuals, we talked about this a little bit, but they just have different boundaries of technology. And these are very contextual boundaries, meaning that they vary. And I think that religion makes the space for that because religion's very old and has been through many an iteration. And lots of people who might be one religion in one country might experience that religion and these practices differently in their country than another country, even if they're the same faith. And that's just because a lot of practices are contextual. So we see that apply to technology. And we see that porousness. And then finally, I think even though a lot of religious stakeholders might have these strong boundaries with technology, they still have desires. And I would say a lot of these have to do with things like humility, community, embracing this embodiedness that we were talking about, and also just embracing a sense of wonder. What does it mean to really embrace the unknown and be able to sit with the unknown, especially in a world where a lot of technology interfaces are apt to give you a 200-word summary of everything. And that's really awesome in some ways because democratization of knowledge and being able to give people a quick overview. But not every question probably has a 200-word answer. I don't think the world would be very fun if it did. And I think religion does give you one lens for how a lot of people sit with the unknown and also embrace wonder.
It seemed to me from the outset, we named AI and faith that way, that name, because it seemed like an oxymoron to many people at the time. And here we are 8 years later, having you consider how these two things, you know, fit together or affect each other in a research project at Microsoft. So that's a very exciting. It seemed to me from the outset, though, that in fact, there is a real overlap because between the sort of digital world and the spiritual world, they're both places that aren't embodied, that are they're embodied in the sense of practice. When you practice your religion, you're obviously doing it in an embodied way. And yet it's about something you can't see, feel, or experience except in a spiritual way. It's mainly this ephemeral kind of context. I mean, and not in the minor sense, but in a sense of spirit. And digital has some of that same quality to it. I mean, you experience it through bits and all the computer world. Did you get any sense from people as you talked to them about that kind of comparison?
I think there's a lot of comparisons that can be made. And I think what's really cool about religion, and part of the reason I focus on religion and empirical work, is it's just really interesting. You know, religion has so many stories, so many metaphors. And even if you're not someone that ascribes to a certain faith, those metaphors are very useful and tell you a lot about how people experience the world. A lot of comparisons that were made were kind of what you were talking about of like, there is a mystery to the machine. There is also this notion of connectedness that people do feel, especially when you look at folks who are from more polytheistic or animistic faiths. So faiths that don't necessarily believe in just one God, that are more comfortable with the notion of different entities and different spirits. You see those folks especially being very open to the notion of AI as a spirit and even that brings them to different forms of governance. So for example, Wikipedia is a digital public good, a digital public commons, if you would. And the notion of, in a lot of Shinto, for example, is that spirits steward the commons. They steward public places, public spaces. The notion of an AI spirit or a digital spirit stewarding these digital commons is not, that's actually a very friendly metaphor. It's not like this big weird thing for folks from those backgrounds. I would also say for folks from a monotheistic background, there is a notion too of what does it mean to discover and reflect and bring yourself closer to whatever you believe in, whether it be God, whether it be another deity or deities. The notion that technology can help you do that is really helpful for some people. And I think that's important. And a lot of those comparisons that were made to me were things of like particular rituals, like a prayer book or some type of parable memoing activity that people do, and now they can do it digitally. But I think there is still a bit of a knowing that technology does often come from these big black boxes that folks don't quite understand, I think is important. And I think that's where a lot of folks kind of have that boundary of like, I'm okay with this, maybe helping summarize the Bible verse, but I don't want it to say it can pray for me because it doesn't have a heart. I don't want it to say that we can hold our hearts together to pray. Or for someone to say, you know, I don't think like fatwa, which is like Islamic decisioning, should be done with AI. You can call someone and maybe like, that is the better way to do it. That's where the boundary is. Technology helps you access a faith leader like a mufti, but ChatGPT cannot replace that faith leader. So I think you kind of see that hesitance, but I do think a lot of the metaphors are really helpful. Things like those stewarding spirits and things like just rituals are technology based now. I think a lot of people talked about accessing their Bible on their iPad instead of on paper. And like, there is a difference, but just like technology giving them the accessibility of being on the go was way more valuable for them in their religious practice than being like very connected to the paper. And that's a decision that is, again, really contextual. So I think that's what's also fun is a lot of these metaphors are very contextual and are very individual.
Where are you going from here with your own research? And will this be, this summer experience be useful for you in it?
Always, always useful. First of all, I think all research, I've been very lucky to have done a lot of great research during my PhD that all builds up my research agenda and just human knowledge at large. So for me, I'm currently writing a lot of this up. I'm in the writing stage. Sometimes when you're in a PhD, you're collecting a lot of data and you're like, get me the data. Or you're in a writing stage where you're like processing the data. And I'm definitely in that stage in my PhD. I'll be writing this type of work up. We have some of it under peer review right now. More of it's being written up. And then in terms of my other work, Microsoft Research, the stuff I did here is a little bit separate. It's not part of my core dissertation work, but my core dissertation work does interface with religion as an empirical case study. That's part of the reason I ended up in the space because I had some experience in it. And this project has just given me even more understanding of different religious stakeholders I haven't always been able to access or chat with in my other work, and really just given me a sense of how to write and how to do the research that's foundational towards kind of these design values or these actionable containers of meaning for technologists. I think sometimes in academia, that's a little bit harder of work to do because you might not have access to practitioners the way that I did at Microsoft. So the angling of the research was different, and that was a great growing experience for me. In terms of where I'm going, lots of writing. I'm going to be taking what's called a general exam this year, which is where you get to become a PhD candidate. So lots of reading too. And then I will be proposing a dissertation, and I'm probably going to be graduating in 2028. So I still have a little bit of my PhD left, which is exciting. It's more to explore.
Well, this has been really interesting, Nina, and I hope that we'll be hearing more from you as you move ahead into your PhD, completing that work. And I know from your slides that this is practical material that I think will have a real impact down the line. We'll see how it goes, but it's pioneering work, certainly to be inside a big tech company and exploring the overlap with the big faith world, which you've done very well. So really nice to have met you this summer, and I wish you all the best as you return to your academic studies.
Well, thanks, David.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. Stay tuned to listen to more recordings and interviews with experts from around the world. In the meantime, follow and rate our podcast on your favorite podcast platform and share it with your friends. Don't forget to follow us on our social media as well. We're on LinkedIn, X, and Blue Sky. Thank you for joining us today.